So I know you've had eight practices that you scaled successfully. What would you say was the easiest and one easiest and one hardest part of scaling those practices up to the degree that you did?
I love how you asked me what was the easiest first. There is, I don't know if you know, most people listen, I don't know if you know this, but there's only 1% businesses on the planet will ever reach above 5 million, okay, in revenue, which we did. So by virtue of like it's only 1% of businesses will ever do that. There's not much about it that was easy, but I would say this actually, the easiest part came directly after. Your question is great actually, because when you, what was the easiest part came after we had, there was no room to turn back. So let's say, so we once we signed the lease, once we signed the lease, once we signed the lease, there was no choice, there was no chance for us to still deliberate whether this was a good or bad decision. We were doing it. That was the easiest part. Once the sign was leased, it once the lease was signed, everything up to that was really hard. Should we do it? Risk profiling. Do we have the capital to do it? How long is it going to take? We have to find the staff. We have to refurb the place. We have to do the whole thing. Like even thinking about all of that, there's no ways any sane human being will do it. Multiple, if they think. And it's good to think, obviously, plan through all the processes. But the best part was when we had signed the lease and we kind of went, Richard Branson, I don't know if I can say this on the podcast, but Richard Branson had a book that's titled Screw It, Just Do It. And it was kind of like once we signed the lease, it was like, screw it, let's just do it. And then that was fun. And I was like, okay, cool. Now we have no choice. It's like, go for it. So that was the easiest part, is once it was signed, there was no turning back. But everything up until that was hard. Was hard. And then after that, it just became normal business, a normal business of that. And the hardest part was probably more technically, if you listen to this right in this podcast right now. So we scaled and we were self-funded. So that means that we never got any bank loans or anything to grow our business. We're very, very blessed to be able to do that. That means we were generating enough cash to do that. But again, I work with a lot of docs who are scaling right now. And the number one question I'd ask them is, how are they funding it? If they are self-funding, that's most businesses can't self-fund. It's very difficult to self-fund. And I would say in most cases, it's once you, if you self-fund a business, you get it to many millions in revenue, you do look back and go, wow, that's cool that we don't have, like we didn't have a big debt to do it. However, the journey there is much harder. So if asked me if I'd do it again that way, if I do it all over again, I'd probably say I would have got a little bit more debt, just so that the business, at times the businesses was we were trying to run the business on so leanly because it was self-funding, that sometimes I think the stress, we didn't need to put that extra stress on ourselves, and that sometimes good debt like that can help us scale and take a bit of pressure off us and not make decisions just based on, let's say the cash flow is going to be a challenge or something. So just for context, we grew 30% year on year for 5 years in a row. That is what they call a gazelle company. Now, fast growth, everyone wants to grow fast, grow fast, grow fast. But if I have a business owner that I work with that's growing more than 30%, I would normally say that looks in many cases like growth can kill too, because to keep up with the growth, you have to hire fast. You have many challenges that go with that. You break things faster. You have your mess ups are just bigger mess ups when you're doing it fast. So we grew so fast at 30% year on year every single year. We added £1 million a year every single year for over 3 or 4 years, 30% growth every single year. So the hardest part was self-funding with fast growth, when actually in many times we could have enjoyed the ride a little bit more, and probably just leaned into it a little bit more, just enjoyed the ride a little bit more. So hope that answers your questions. Well, by far the funnest was once we signed the lease, and by far the hardest was self-funding the whole process ourselves.
What's a recurring theme or piece of advice that you provide your platinum groups year on, again and again, but they just return and they don't implement it, but you know that if they do that one thing, it would change their practice?
It's a great question. The thing that immediately comes to my mind, and it's actually, I can't say that it's the one thing that nobody implements, but I would say the thing that I give advice on is two things that gets the most resistance or rolling of eyes would have something to do with either live events. So we absolutely know that a live gathering of any sort is by far and away the best way. If you could put bums in seats and you can get people there to acquire new customers in any business and quality new customers in any business. So there are some businesses I work with that really embrace this. Most don't. And it's typically because they don't quite know the history of the profession. If you go read books by Dr. Veda, who was one of the lecturers with, BJ, you'll see that even back in the day, they were talking about doing live workshops within the practice. That's one that I know it'll absolutely 100% grow the practice. If everyone got every single new patient, or every single patient wants to become a new patient, into an orientation class that was well structured, that pre-frame healing takes time, that dealt with objections prior to the selling environment or after the selling environment, that reaffirmed that the decision was the right decision, let's say after a report of findings, okay, and re-managed expectations again. Every single person, if they did it religiously, would have more referrals from that, because guests would come, and their PVA and retention would go through the roof. Yet, it's the one thing that's probably at the moment, maybe with the younger chiropractors, getting the most resistance, because I don't know, maybe it's with the back of falling out of habits, COVID, and people didn't go to live gatherings or whatever it is. But that's the way, that's one thing. And the other thing, which is so interesting for me, is print media. Again, maybe the younger than my audience is getting, that's the one that gives the biggest like people can't believe it. Now, I'll tell you some statistics, and we're working with hundreds of chiropractors all across the world right now. But for example, one of my chiropractors I work with, his most lucrative source of patient he works with is a patient that suffers with neuropathy. For that particular niche, he gets almost zero results from online marketing. Okay, now every agency out there, and we're an agency too, every agency's right there out there saying we can get you results in neuropathy. But for the same customer, if we do postcards, old school, if we do newspaper ads, he'll get 50 to 60 people from postcards in a workshop that is old school, ugly looking postcard. And the only call to action is phone this number. There's no QR code, there's no email, there's no nothing sexy on it, but he gets 50 to 60 people registering for his workshops for that. But if we do the same advert on another form of medium, like Instagram or Facebook, we can't fill a room. And then every chiropractor listening to this right now is going to go, wow, really? Postcards? And then I'm going to go, like everything, like fashion, like anything, things come back into fashion. And the only way you know is to test. So those are two things. One is live events of any source, speaking at local Rotary clubs, getting people to your practice, whatever it is. If you can get in front of people and you can deliver a compelling message with passion and a good call to action at the end of it, your life will change. And the other one is, not that I'm saying every one of you will have a home run with this, but when was the last time you tested anything in print? Postcards, newsletters, or newspapers? Because this is right now. I think we're July 2024. So if you listen to this, don't you think this is like recorded in, 2018? This is July 2024, and we have people right now in the digital era with all the sexy marketing things in the world, that the only thing working for their highest value customer is postcards. I want you to listen to that and go, ooh, maybe I should give that a go. So it's live events and print medium of any source. That's probably the ones that people drag their heels on the most. Hey, real quick, if you're enjoying this video and you'd like to see more content like this, please do me a favor. Just smash that like button, comment down below, or subscribe, and make sure you turn your notifications on so you can see more content just like this.
So you've obviously owned multiple clinics, you own multiple properties, you also currently own a consulting and marketing agency. So you have a lot of experience in the entrepreneurial space. What would you say is your biggest regret throughout this whole experience?
I think the thing that comes to mind is not, well, there's two things. I mean, most chiropractors are going to be not that great at, if you listen to this right now and you may be an entrepreneur, probably my biggest regret is not getting a more financial literacy training sooner. Now I teach it and I do it and I help so many chiropractors with it, but it wasn't out of a place of always knowing it well. But I'd say my biggest regret was not diving into all things financial literacy sooner in my career, because I thought everyone had my back. I thought an accountant had my back, or a tax advisor had my back, or a CFO in my business had my back, or my practice manager had my back, and my realization has been nobody's coming to save you. No one knows anything. And I think I was in a room once, and this was a big eye opener for me. There was an accountant in the room. So most chiropractors are like, yeah, I've got an accountant. He does my books for me. There was an accountant in the room, and there was a guy in the room who's got no accounting degree, and he consults to business owners to get their finances in order. And what really struck me was when he said that he consults mostly to accountants to get their finances in order. And I remember sitting in the room going, what? Hang on a second. He's like, and he's got no formal accounting degree, but he will advise to accountants to get their own finances in order. And it was at the moment, a moment I really realized that, oh shit, no one is coming to save me. If the accountants that you think have got your back need someone else to have their back, we're in trouble. So that doesn't mean you don't trust your accountant. That doesn't mean you don't trust your CFO. That doesn't mean you don't trust your CPA. But for example, to get a business advisor diploma, or a financial advisor diploma, it's a few weeks of training, not even months. And not many, many months. So someone can become a financial advisor in under a year. So think about that. Now, I've been in business now for 15 plus years, multiple journeys, multiple mess ups, multiple challenges, multiple businesses that did great stuff, and then businesses that I started and was like, why did I do that? So I've had as many failures as I've had successes. I've just been blessed enough to always be in an environment where I'm always being coached, always being mentored. But the one area I probably didn't take up mentoring soon enough in my career was financial literacy. And everyone listening to this right now, especially if you're in the service-based industry, you probably just went, oh, damn it, I wish you didn't say that. Because it's not sexy, it's not exciting. And at the beginning, there's such a knowledge gap, you feel so inferior and less than, because you kind of feel like a bit of a fraud when you look at your accounts and you can't read them, and you look at your balance sheet and you don't know what a balance sheet is, and you look at your balance sheet and you don't know what the difference between a creditor and a debtor is, and you run a business and deep down you feel like a bit of a fraud. You feel like but you dare not say anything. And even when the accountant talks to you and tells you stuff that you should understand, you very seldom correct them. And my advice to anyone listening to this right now, I want you to, I know they say there's no such thing as a stupid question, but it's absolutely your responsibility to ask your accountant and bookkeeper every time you don't understand anything. Because how are you supposed to understand anything? No chiropractor was taught pretty much any finances at university. So you're not a fraud, and you're not a failure, and you're not worthy of running a great business. Richard Branson himself famously joked about not being able to know the difference between net and gross profit. You can go Google it. And he was I think he was a billionaire, and he didn't know the difference between net and gross profit. So if you're a chiropractor listening to this right now and you don't know the difference between a creditor and a debtor, welcome to the club. I was also there once upon a time. So that was my biggest regret, was not diving into financial literacy sooner as a chiropractor, because I thought people had my back. But the truth is, no one's come to save you. You absolutely need to put yourself in an environment where you understand those elements of your business, because you are in business, and that goes with running a business. If you don't have a clean profit and loss by the 10th of every single month, I promise you right now that there is a shitstorm waiting for you at some point in your career. That's the first thing I'd sort out. And some business owners go their whole lives not running clean accounts, not having a shitstorm. They are the exception, not the rule. They are lucky. I don't want you to go through your business career being lucky. I want you to have a certainty that you're not going to have a disaster. So that's how I answer that question.